Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Ben Jackson. I'll be your host for this episode. This week, it's just a two-man game, just myself and Joris. Unfortunately, Scott can't join us. Joris, how are you doing this evening?
I'm all right. Good. Actually, couldn't be better. Had a nice day. And let's dive in.
So let's quickly run through the results from this round 12 of matches. So we started on Friday night with Sint-Truiden against Molenbeek. That one finished 2-1 to Sint-Truiden. Bit of a sleepy one until the last couple of minutes there. Mechelen lost again. They lost 2-0 to Cercle Bruges. Eupen won. They beat Charleroi 2-0. Anderlecht came from behind to beat Leuven 5-1. Club Bruges left it late to beat defending champions Antwerp 2-1. Union Saint-Gilloise beat Vestelo 3-1 away from home. Ghent and Standard decided they didn't want to score any penalties, but that one still had 4 goals and finished 3-1 to Ghent. And then Kortrijk lost 3-0 to Genk at home. So let's start with the Sint-Truiden Molenbeek game, which, yeah, in all honesty, didn't really start until the 82nd minute, it felt like, when Sint-Truiden were awarded a penalty. Up stepped Abubakari Koita. He made it 1-0 to Sint-Truiden, and probably thought at that point, you know, that was it. That was probably the game that should have kind of been it, because it wasn't really too much between the sides. Sint-Truiden more possession, but they probably had equal amount of shots, equal amount of chances. But Molenbeek did score an equaliser in the 93rd minute. Mahtar Gay with the finish there. And again, thinking the game's done, thinking it's 1-1 and that'll be all she wrote. But 3 minutes later, Sint-Truiden go down the other end and score. It was a link-up of the fullbacks. Eric Bokat was the cross to the back post. Daichi Hashioka with the finish. Really, really nice header from him to make it 2-1 to Sint-Truiden. Ends a pretty poor run for Sint-Truiden, in all honesty. They've not managed to kind of win the last three games and a couple of big, heavy defeats, so they'll be quite happy. Whereas, I guess, for Molenbeek, we spoke about it a little bit last time, Joris, but it's a defeat that kind of prolongs their winless run, and they're starting to drop down towards that bottom four.
Yeah, they definitely are. That's sliding down the table, just 1 point above the relegation playoffs at the moment. And we already talked about this the team as well, but it's the fourth time in the last five games that they concede after the 90 minutes are over. So, if you even would just chop off all those goals, they would be comfortably in mid-table and in the higher end of the mid-table, even, I think, the classification. So, yeah, that's something they probably need to work on. Yeah, maybe it's still all very close, so that's good for them. But these are the kind of games that they probably want to get some points out. First Sint-Truiden, then on the other hand, Koita scored his 8th goal with that penalty, which is up for debate, I think, as well, if that would be a penalty. But again, handball rulings and so on and so forth. But that's the 8th goal out of their total of 13 goals scored now. They also upped their home goal total to 5 now, which is not that many, of course, either. I found it a bit funny, Hashioka scoring that final minute winner. Yeah, and then having cramps instead of really being able to celebrate on the pitch. Yeah, he gave it his all, obviously. They finally got a win over the line again. That they indeed had been waiting for that for quite some time now.
Yeah, that was quite funny at the end. He was just kind of like lying there getting treatment while everyone else is celebrating. It was quite nice to see kind of Bokat and Hashioka kind of link up in that sense, because I feel like they're two of the kind of really important players for the way Sint-Truiden play, because they were, or historically they were, more defensive players, but they kind of have to push forward and do a little bit more in this system. And I think, especially Bokat, I think he's really underrated in terms of how well he plays each game. He's very, very consistent. Not the most like creative or kind of goal scoring in that sense, but he does his work defensively. He does his work offensively as well. So I think, yeah, he's been a really, really good player since joining them last season, I think it was, wasn't it? So yeah, shout out to him. Nice to see him get an assist. And yeah, Hashioka, who had a bit of a rough time of it last year. I don't think he had as strong a second season as he did his first, but this season, maybe he's starting to look a little bit more like it. He's getting some goals, a couple of assists as well. So good news for him and good news for St. Ludon. Bad news for Mechelen. As I said in the intro, they lost again, this time to Cercle Bruges. Even after this defeat, the newspapers are reporting that the board are still confident in Stephen Defoe. It's not the dreaded vote of confidence. It just sounds like they're kind of taking mitigating circumstances into kind of consideration. One of those was that they didn't have Rob Skous for this one, and Emory Kanate was an injury doubt, but still have to come on after 36 minutes anyway, after what looked like a really bad injury to Toon Raymakers. So we wish him a speedy recovery. Sandy Walsh then has to go off injured as well, I believe at half time. So when it rains, it pours for Mechelen and Stephen Defoe at the moment. Over for Cercle, everything seems to kind of be bouncing their way, none more so than the first goal. Counter-attack, but it was after kind of Mechelen's best spell of the game, to be fair. They kind of up the ante a bit and looked like they were pressing for the first goal, get hit on the counter-attack, and kind of the initial moment of the counter-attack is like the ball just bounces so kindly for a Cercle player to pick it up and drive forward with it. Ball finds Felix Le Martial, his ball to the back post finds Kevin Denke. Denke, you know, the drill now, finds the back of the net. That makes it 1-0 to Cercle Bruges. It then becomes 2-0 in the 72nd minute. Substitute Kazim Olagbi. He comes off for Yanga Boho. Literally 6 minutes later, he scores. Absolutely floors poor David Bates. Just absolutely twists him in circles before finding the back of the net. Bates then goes down injured and then has to go off. I don't know if he actually... I didn't think he was injured, but it was one of those, I think I said, just if that happens to you, just pretend you are at least. Almost kind of compounding the misery of Mechelen was in the dying minute, Cercle get a penalty. Kevin Denke misses his initial attempt, puts in the second one, but because it hit the post and came back to him, he's not allowed to touch it. If he left it, I'm pretty sure Thibaut Sommers was there just to tap it in. Didn't really matter at the end of the day. Cercle win 2-0. Mechelen lose again. They're now only teams below them are Kortrijk and Vesterlo. We know how bad their start to the season has been. Joris, obviously, at this moment in time, would hand over to Scott to kind of moan about how Mechelen are doing. But without Scott, it's over to you to kind of dissect what has been another poor weekend for Malinois.
Yeah, what is it now? 1 point out of the last six games or something like that? Anyway, if it's not exactly that, it's definitely adding some insults to injury as well, that they're definitely, regardless of what the exact amount of games is, in a worse form than the teams behind them, actually. They are definitely looking in a very sorry state at the moment. On top of that bad streak, also talking about injuries, of course, Raamakers' injury doesn't help, and I believe Konaté injury. So they also are having some bad streak off the pitch, or on that front at least, as well. Yeah, that's definitely, there's not that many encouraging signs for them, except maybe, that indeed a few of their top players are maybe not showing their best form. If they can find that, they still should be fine. They should find it quite quickly now as well, because it's really looking quite dim there as well. Nothing too exciting going on either. Yeah, so definitely see some things to improve at Mechelen. That's to really say the least. The level, the performance level was not really great here in this game either. Maybe that goes even for both teams, but for Mechelen, really, they were struggling and deserved unfortunately also to lose this game in the end. And on Cercle, on the other hand, then Denke is a first. Donke, I'll do it first for the first right for the first time in weeks again. But he's the first player to reach 10 goals this season. But also there was that missed penalty as well, which is something you don't see that often. And luckily, it didn't really matter anymore. But the hitting the post indeed and putting it in, and that rule being applied. Having to be applied, and they are having, on the other hand, in comparison to Mechelen, a really consistently inconsistent season. That's the last nine games, the first three of those nine they won, then the middle three they lost, and now they again the last three they won. Yeah, and that's of course something that you'd like to see as a manager of Frederik de Brugge. I can imagine Muslic is really happy at the moment. Also, of course, that also means you get 2/3 of them of the points. Can they keep it going? Because that's actually a rhythm of gaining points. Like I've always said, I think last season as well and seasons before, generally, 2/3 of points means getting 2/3 of the points means you're, well, at least contending for the title. So I think they will be very pleased to hear these words.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think even in their wildest dreams they would have been competing for the title by the end of the season. But the way they're going, they look like they could really, really push into and keep into that top six if they can, maintain that consistency. One side who have been consistently rubbish were Erpen, 7 or 8, I think it was 7 defeats on the bounce they had, and just been getting absolutely mauled in the process. Charleroi came to town off the back of their kind of big 3-2 win over Antwerp. They had a 2-1 win over Molenbeek as well, so they had a little bit of form. Thought they'd taken the lead through Stulic, thought he'd got his second in as many kind of in a matter of days, basically, but Knezovic, of all people, was up there and he was offside quite marginally. It was a really nice finish from Stulic, but unfortunately for him, that one was ruled out. Erpen then hit Charlotte on the counter-attack late in the first half to get the opening goal. Jan Kral, of all people, who was a complete kind of forgotten man last year, brought in at the beginning of the season and just completely disappeared. He somehow popped up at the top of the pitch to finish off a counter-attack. Isaac Christie-Davies with the assist. Kral's finish really nice into the bottom corner. They then made it 2-0 in the second half. Kevin Møvald gets his first goal for the club in the 54th minute. And yeah, Erpen win quite unexpectedly. I didn't quite see them winning this one. Didn't even see them keeping a clean sheet for Slonina. That's his first clean sheet since he joined the club in August. They've conceded the most goals in that time as well. So it's not been a happy kind of loan spell for him. Unless he kind of enjoys being busy, then he's definitely at least getting his kind of his money's work and he's getting to work on his skills. Joris, I think really disappointing result and performance for Charleroi in this one. Like, they had enough possession, enough kind of chances to at least score and probably take the points on another day, but two kind of smash and grab moments from Erpen, and they are looking a little bit more comfortable in the league now. And maybe this is the start of another little run for them after their really, really bad run.
Yeah, definitely. So for on Erpen, yeah, it's 6 games that they had lost before this game. So slightly better than you said, but well, must win game one for them. A little bit of breathing space and some jump in the ranking as well. Getting next to Charleroi and Molenbeek, among others. Yeah, indeed, second clean sheet, but in the first clean sheet, Nuruddin was still in goal. So for Slonina, indeed, his first clean sheet. Somehow, I also added there, well, both with that goal being disallowed and also a few big other chances. He did make some great saves as well, though, so I do want to give him the credit for that. And probably also, indeed, the goal of his loan spell on the personal level definitely is that, exactly that. Having a lot of work and then being able to showcase your skills there. And probably also it's Chelsea's reasoning a bit about behind that loan. It has to be said as well, they are actually conceding less than they are expected to concede as well. So that their expected goals, they are worst in expected goals against, and they're doing slightly better than that as well. So that's interesting, maybe also worrying. That's something we will have to see over the course of the season, the rest of the season, of course. But at the moment, that's not really, it's not really a stat you want to look. You want to be first in for sure. On Charleroi, their small surge halted. The surge is also really something really premature to say. Maybe they got 2 wins at home lately, but it's no coincidence that they got them at home, because they away from home they only got 1 point so far, and it's against the side that's only recently got their first home win as well. That's Genk, of course. Also, that's another factor. Genk was also the team that Erpen got their first clean sheet against in the away game there. as well. So that's that different times, luckily, for Hink, but for Hink already to touch on that. But yeah, the defending in particular on those goals, it was way too easy, specifically that second one. It felt like it was actually it was painted on the field, this goal, but then with a little bit of a slow motion effect on it, when you could see where everything would be going, but still it happened. And Möbald finished it off nicely. That I'm not taking anything from that, but it felt like there could have been a lot of better defending in this case, in this particular phase of the game, which eventually killed Charleroi. On any other day, they might have gotten away with a win or a draw in this game as well. I do feel like that, but it wasn't to be. And vital win for Korfeld, for sure.
Yeah, you could really see the relief on his face and in the dugout at the end of that one. And I think I was just kind of looking at the table during the weekend, just thinking basically anyone from 9 downwards, so St. Trude and downwards, you can easily see either getting relegated or being in the bottom four. Like, there's just not enough quality within each squad to be like, yeah, no, that team's just on a bad run, but they could drag themselves out of it. Like, I think we know who these teams are now after 12 games, and they've all got so many holes in them. Charleroi they just really don't look that great at both ends at the moment, which is what's kind of a bit concerning for them. Kind of their best players are in midfield, but they don't really seem to be able to make enough of a difference for the poor defensive errors and then the lack of kind of potency up front. And then, I mean, open, we could easily see them go and get smashed next week. Just that's the way they've kind of been operating. One of those sides that did a drubbing on one of the other teams in that kind of bottom area were Leuven last weekend, when they obviously beat St. Trude 4-0, and we're like, okay, maybe they've turned around the corner. But then they went to Anderlecht and decided to just return to the same old Leuven that just can't defend. They did actually take the lead, though, within 6 minutes. Missau with a ridiculously good goal. Although, I don't know, Joris, you can probably touch on this as well, as you have a bit of a fondness for goalkeeping. I feel like 5-6 years ago, Kasper Schmeichel probably saves it, but he just looks a little bit slower than he ever was in his prime. But I feel like in his prime, he probably does actually save this one. But take nothing away from the strike. It was nice, and it did kind of curl away from him at the same time. Joran Dom's been given the assist for that, but I just don't feel like that's an assist, just passing it sideways to someone on the edge of the box who takes a touch and then decides to shoot. Like, you've not really done anything. Speaking of goals outside the box, though, Anders Threde decided to have himself a game in this one. 12 minutes, so literally 6 minutes after Missau gives Leuven the lead, he smashes in an equaliser from outside the box. Anderlecht push, but they can't find another goal until just before half-time, when it's Dreyer again. He crosses it into the box and it evades everyone and goes into the back of the net, which causes massive anger to Miguel. And I don't really understand why. And I've tried to catch on the replay what he was so angry about, because at first I thought it was about an offside, but then he's talking to Anderlecht players. So I don't know if him going and complaining about the offside then led to complaints or a kind of altercation with the Anderlecht players. Nevertheless, in the second half, literally from a corner almost immediately, Anderlecht make it 3-1. Augustinsson flicks it on. Dolberg taps it in, not smashes it in. That's a bit of an overstatement. He taps it in to make it 3. Stoikens, then really nice finish from him in the 52nd to make it 4. Dreyer then gets a hat-trick in the 86th with another goal from outside of the box. And that was it, 5-1. Hat-trick from Dreyer, also outside the box. We spoke a few weeks ago about him, about how he can do nothing all game and then pops up with a goal. This is kind of what Rima wants and hopes for each game, but I don't think even he would have expected him to score a hat-trick. Some really, really nice finishes, especially the first and the third one. The second one was just one of those fluky, lucky ones that Prevost probably should have done a little bit better with. Big, good win for Anderlecht, for Leuven. It feels, it's a bit like one step forward and then another 5 steps backwards in terms of conceding and their performance.
Yeah, that's you could say that it was their first loss in Anderlecht since coming back up in 2020, though. So that's a streak broken that they did not want to see broken, of course. But yeah, their defending, it was not really great. Also, on one hand, it's really good. Well, you can't take away anything from Dreyer's goals there, but like that he has a shot from distance, I think, you know, before the game. And at least you should know that after he scored that first goal, but then he still scored two more, and I think another one hit the post as well, so he could have had even had four from distance. Like, yeah, that you can't let that man shoot so easily. There's a lot of things to say that I also see that I do not really enjoy while watching him, but that shot from distance, that's just, you know, yeah, he's one of his main qualities, and yeah, you really just can't let it happen so easily. So that's very, very bad defending on the defensive side, at least from Leuven, whether it's down to the defenders or the midfielders, maybe that's one of the issues. But they've definitely found those spaces too easily. Well, then we are already at Dreyer, and how unique this fact is. He scored three goals from outside of the box, so a hat-trick outside of the box. And that didn't happen in the biggest European leagues in the last 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, if I read that correctly. Yeah, so really the Danish providing the goals as well. And that actually indeed, like you mentioned, includes a bit Leuven's goal. The ball was placed really nicely from Misao, but I did feel like at least Schmeichel could have been closer to the ball and in his best days definitely saved it even as well. But yeah, you would expect him to do better on that, of course. I'm not sure if Schmeichel even already, despite André's recent form, except the end of the second half of last week, I don't think he actually has gotten a clean sheet so far either. Yeah, and we know that it's been a bit of a debate in the beginning of the season, especially when they just got him, whether he Dupuy or him should stay playing goal. As long as the results are good, this is not going to be an issue. So I think he's also really happy it's actually just a footnote in this game in the end. But of course, at the time of conceding it, it wasn't. Going back to the Danish providing the goals, so Dreyer, three, and that's six goals in total at the moment as well, doubling his total tally of the season. Dolberg is also already at six or seven, I believe, and also five goals in the five last games he started. Well, I'm not sure if it's five goals, but in the last five games that he started, he always has scored, for sure. But I also want to highlight one other player, Theo Leoni, got another assist, got six assists now already. So I feel like he really deserves a shout. And he's really being... slowly turning into their main man in midfield, which is not a mean feat with the names, some of the names that are on the pitch there. And he's showing a lot of progress, I guess, as well, and consistency throughout most of his games.
Yeah, no, it's definitely shout out to Leone. I think as well, like when you look at, he's what, like 24, and like for Anderlecht and breaking through from the academy, that's, he's had to wait a little bit of time compared to some of the other guys who we have seen come through. So fair play, he's kind of stuck it out and he's kind of late blooming, which is really, really nice. And yeah, no, I completely agree. I think he is probably their main man in midfield when, even though they signed, obviously Delaney's injured, so it's quite difficult with them, Mats Wits and some of the other guys as well. So yeah, he's definitely doing a great job in there, and yeah, long may it continue for him. Let's go to Sunday, Club Brugge against Antwerp. Both sides have kind of differing European experiences. Home side, Club Brugge, they travelled to play Lugano and they won 3-1. Scott's favourite player, Eder Balanta, with the opening goal after 15 minutes. Andreas Skovolsten then made it 2-0 just inside the second half with a nice finish as well. Shikin Vladli did get one back for Lugano to make it a little bit nervy for Club Brugge, but Hans Van Aken late on stepped up to make it 3-1 and give them a much needed, well, a really good win, to get them top of Group D, especially with Glimt then going and picking up their first win over Besiktas. Lugano then have to travel to Club Brugge, so a win there, and you'd think they're probably almost guaranteed at least top two spaces, a top two place. If they can just kind of go unbeaten from there, they should definitely be fine. Antwerp, on the other hand, had another rude kind of lesson in Champions League football. Porto, obviously a very, very, very good team in the Champions League, always kind of getting results and doing good stuff in there. But Antwerp did take the lead through Alhassan Youssef just before half-time. But literally immediately after half-time, Ivan Ilsen got one, then he got another, and then he got another. With in between there, Steven Estaquio, got one as well. So finished 4-1 to for Porto in the end. And that pretty much is probably the end of kind of Champions League ambitions. If Antwerp had any, they have to beat Shakhtar Donetsk next time up, and they need to get a point at least from either Porto or Barcelona and hope that Shakhtar lose all their games. But I think that defeat to Shakhtar has kind of really killed their campaign anyway. So on the back of that, they have to travel to Bruges for a big one. And they go behind to a Ferran Jütte goal after Skovolsen attested the palms of Jean Boutte. It's Kasper Nielsen, I think it was, attested the palms of Boutte. Really nice save from him. He couldn't do anything about Jütte's goal. Buchanan with the long throw. He kind of juggles it a little bit, has players on his back, and he's just got players all around him. You really think someone should have at least cleared it, but he manages to flick it without even looking at the goal beyond Boutte to make it 1-0. Antwerp then do get back into it. They had a goal disallowed for an offside from Yeri Batay. Eleni Krenner comes on again off the bench, and again he scores. Just really, really bad defending. I can't remember from who it was. I think it might have been Bjorn Meyer. It was just awful, awful, awful defending, just not clearing the ball, not doing anything with the ball. Ball comes across and Kenyon makes it 1-1, sorry. But then deep into the end of the game, Hans van Aken, once again, second time in the space of a week, wins it for Club Brugge. Ball goes into Thiago, who's come off the bench. Thiago plays it back across, van Aken smashes it home. Antwerp defence really, really poor. No one tracked Thiago, no one tracked van Aken. Absolutely nothing going on there. Club Brugge get a massive, massive win that they've desperately wanted. For Antwerp, it's more frustration. They've really, really struggled. That's only one win in their last six games in the league, and that was at home to Eupen. You'd think there probably isn't starting to come some pressure on Mark van Bommel, given what he achieved last year. But I think, Joris, it's kind of showing that a lot of people presume that the Champions League and then the domestic stuff would struggle. But I feel like that's a simplification to say that it's just down to that.
Yeah, it shows that they really had to run at the tip of their toes last season. Well, and also, of course, how the championships turned out has been decided, showed that, of course, as well. But that they might have actually overperformed a little there. And yeah, it's difficult to confirm both this saying of mine and also this theory, and also just actually confirm after winning a championship. It's actually not often more difficult than getting it the first time around. Not saying that they can't make it this year still, but there are signs that it's going to be tough to get there this year around. But their squad has not been reinforced enough. It looks like, and even though of course Ile Nikola got his second goal of the season, and now that's the second week in a row, I believe, as well. So he is finally getting some goals in, but they were a bit over reliant on a few players who now maybe also are carrying some of last season's fatigue with them a bit, and the weight of the attack on them to not name Vincent Janssen there by name. But he needs to play everything. Until recently, at least, he has played a lot, and maybe there a little bit more rotation couldn't hurt him as well. Yeah, having to play a lot, then not scoring, a bit being a bit out of form, but still having to carry that weight. Yeah, and then the weight gets heavier and heavier, I guess, as well. Yeah, and also in general, I also know from personal experience, maybe not, but personal fan experience, that it does play quite a role. This Champions League. evenings, especially you're not expected to take much out of them necessarily, but nonetheless, yeah, you don't it's not nice to lose, and it's not good for your confidence to lose so often. Also, this Champions League also just means there is of course a busier schedule in combination with everything. So I do think that the factors that you named there are big factors, but of course it's also a culmination then, of course, with once it goes south a bit, it's easier to get stuck in that, it's difficult to turn that form, this fate around, in even if it's in different competitions as well. But yeah, definitely they are struggling. This also went for both teams in this game, I guess. That first half, honestly, that was not worth watching it. Many people were very disappointed in that. It really looked like both teams were more afraid to lose than to win. I'm not saying that's not understandable either in both teams' forms in the league, but yeah, of course, it's not something you like to see as a fan from either side, and also as a neutral fan. So the entertainment was not really provided until Utrecht really did get a nice cheeky finish. They put that away nicely. Second goal of the season only as well. But really good one, of course. Yeah, and Antwerp, that's now 6 points after the last six games and only one win in these league games as well. So yeah, that's not looking great. They also doubled their amount of goals conceded in the last two league games from 5 to 10. They are a bit of worrying signs. I think the only reason why nobody's really calling it out like a crisis yet is because of, well, they have actually just had that height of the title, and nobody really expected them to continue on that. Of course, people want them or expect them to do better than they are now, but that they really would be going for a second title in a row, it's still possible, but maybe these expectations are a bit too high at the moment as well. But nonetheless, Antwerp, a bit of a worrying signs so far, but their fates can turn quickly as well. They still have a few games coming up as well. This Sunday against Genk at home, of course, that could be a big one. If they win that one, then they are again back within the shout for, well, anything from second spot on, probably on the short term. If they lose that one, then the distance is becoming probably reasonably wide, and the pressure will really be on. Yeah, a draw is probably not enough either, but I think that goes for both sides still in the situation that they're in. So, will be an interesting one to assess and to talk about next week, regardless of the result already. And, on Club Brugge, first win as well since mid-September. That was that last game that Utrecht scored against Charleroi, the 4-2 win, where they also not necessarily deserved to win even in this game. Ultimately, maybe they had the edge, but... Yeah, that's there was not that much in it, and it easily could have gone for a draw, which it looked like that both teams would have signed for before the game, judging by how they came out of the dressing room in the first half as well. But Club Brugge, maybe this is the win that Tyler needed to get going again, together with the European result, of course. Now we can see the impact as well, of course, for Club Brugge now. That's two wins in a row, despite one being in a different league. For Antwerp, that's just another two losses, not just one in the league, but just also two losses in a row, even if it's an expected one. And, of course, the league one is also one that it's not an easy away game, obviously, for any side. But, I just want to point out one positive for Antwerp, maybe though, the Corbani assist Ileniqua, that was a really nice goal, and it was nice to see for them that their youth strategy, even though of course Ileniqua is a bought youth player, but paid off on that goal. It was a really nice finish as well. That's really the only positive I can see for them at the moment, actually.
Yeah, I think they could probably look historically, because how many times have we seen it where like club would struggle a little bit balancing the two, but then as soon as they got knocked out of Europe, they just went on like a tear and had like a really good form and a really good run, and they would win the league. Because of the way the systems were set up back then, it was kind of possible for them to do that. So be interested to see if once Antwerp are out of the Champions League, they can still make it into the Europa League. But yeah, once they're out of European football, it'll be interesting to see kind of there is a switch in terms of their performance improve. Because if they don't, then there will be some real questions being asked. I think you're right. I think given what happened last year, they're kind of like, everyone's a bit like, we can still just kind of enjoy what happened last year and not get too worried for now. But eventually, yeah, people forget and people move on. One side that balance Europe and domestic stuff quite well and have done for a while are Union Saint-Gilloise. They hosted LASK Linz from Austria in the Europa League, obviously at Lotto Park. LASK took the lead through Moses Usor. Really poor defending from Union, actually. No one picked up the run of Usor as he tapped home. Robert Zulge, Bundesliga fans probably remember him. He was a bit of a menace for LASK during this game. Thought he had a really good game, and Union were quite fortunate that he didn't take some of the chances he had. They did think they'd got back into the game through Amora, but it was ruled out for a foul by Amani in the build-up. They did push Union, and I thought they definitely deserved to get back into this. And classic Union, just as you think they're kind of not going to get back into the game and the game's done, they find a way. They get a penalty in the 84th minute. Loic Lapoussin with some really nice feet just gets taken out by one of the defenders. And it was one of those ones where it looked like he was about to shoot. He didn't, and the defender had already dived in to block the shot, but just took him out. Puerta stepped up to convert the penalty. And then deep in added time, corner comes in. Christian Burgess heads it in to make it a 2-1 win for Union. They really did need that, given the other results that had happened in the competition so far. It means they sit second just behind Liverpool with 4 points. Level on points with Toulouse, who obviously lost to Liverpool. Union, if they can go to LASK and pick up another win or even a point and then just beat Toulouse, they should be fine to qualify from the group, or at least, they'll at least get a third place and drop into the conference. But somehow I think they have higher ambitions than that. They follow that up with a trip to struggling Vestalo. And last week we spoke about Griffin Yao, how he'd signed and we'd never seen him. And suddenly, like, he's like a London bus. He's just popping up all over the place. His ball in to the box in the 10th, 11th minute found Ed and Daki. Daki with a nice finish. It was a really good ball from Yao, actually. He then was starting to kind of show what he's about in the central areas. A couple of shots that Maurice had to save, and one that just went just wide of the far post. However, Union got back into the game in the 33rd minute. Corner from Puertas headed out to Lapoussin. He absolutely smashes it past Bola into the back of the net. Dennis Eckhart then gets his sixth goal of the season. Despite the kind of injury problems he's had, that puts him level as a top scorer for Union with Gustav Nielsen, who's obviously also out injured at the moment. The ball comes in, gets flicked on by a Vestalo defender, and it just kind of hits Eckhart, and he does really well actually just guide it past Bolat to make it 2. Amora then comes off the bench to grab another one in the 88th minute. Really nice finish from him. And he's just giving me such Dante Van Zier vibes. He just looked like a like-for-like replacement at the moment. In terms of some of his finishing is wayward, but he just gets into those positions constantly with his kind of hassling and running. And he's probably quicker than Van Zier. He's absolutely lightning. So a good win for Union. Vesto did have those chances, like I said, Bola. Yao with a couple of nice chances, nice shots, but just couldn't quite get them on target and get themselves back into the game. Union finished with an XG of 22 shots. So, they probably were deserved winners. Vesto stayed bottom, Union stayed top.
Yes, definitely. A little thing on this numbers, expected goals, and we know, of course, partly due to the not very successful changes that the Rook made after Union got in front. He basically smashed on, put on a lot of attacking players, and well, instead of creating more for Wesselo, it left them really vulnerable at the back as well. And that it could have been a lot more, though, indeed. That's what the one negative for Union maybe is, that they probably should have scored 5 or 6 times in the end because of this. But yeah, on Westerlo though, where has this Griffin Yeo, where has he been before the last 2 weeks? he really brought something to them. Also a nice assist, of course, in this game. A few more shots that were quite threatening, and just you felt there was something going on whenever he was on the ball. Not always something good, but he definitely did create for them. So if he can keep that up, that would be a good sign for Westerlo, that maybe they have some more attacking prowess in him as well. Yeah, and yeah, like I said, after the changes after the they went behind, had the opposite effects of what the Rook wanted, it could have ended up in a higher score. But until then, they actually were not playing really bad. You would expect Union to win in most cases here, but they kind of gave it a fight. After that, it was quite soon over. After in the end, it was a casual win for Union nonetheless. But there was a little momentum going in the first half where maybe Wesselo could have taken it a bit further than 1-0. Yeah, and this might be a surprising fact, but on the other hand, maybe also not. It's the first time this season in the league that Union won actually score after conceding the first goal in the game. And secondly, also, well, turn it around then and actually win after going behind. They did it a few days before, like you described in Europe already, but it's the first time in the league, which is a bit remarkable because, well, the last few seasons we've seen it a lot from Union on the one hand. But on the other hand, it also means they actually just don't go behind that often this season. So yeah, they don't have that many opportunities to do so. So I guess more the scoring one is a different one. They only went behind in 2 other games before this one, which they both lost. Their 2 losses against Mechelen, the 4-0 in at home against Genk, 0-2. That was worth a mention, but it's 6 wins in a row, 6 goals for Amura now as well, 6 goals for Ekertajensa. So yeah, everything is all they're throwing the dice here and always getting 6 this week, and we'll see. They really seem to be on a really good run again, let's see if the other teams can catch on.
Yeah, no, they are seem like a bit of an unstoppable force at the moment. And yeah, that Mechelen result is just hilarious when you think about kind of where we're at now and what we've seen. It's just so random, so random. You mentioned comfortable. That's probably how we'd describe Gent's Conference League match against Icelandic opposition. I'm going to butcher this. I've been calling them Vidablik, but I know that's the D that I think is a D is definitely... It looks like it could be anything. So if you have any Icelandic speakers, or I know the Best of Pod guys, if you're listening, maybe you can let us know how to say it for the return fixture. Gent won this one 5-0. Omri Gandelman, he opened the scoring within 10 minutes. He then turned provider for Hugo Kuipers. Kuipers got 2, Tiisa Dahli got 1, and even Gift Orband came back with a goal as well. Deep into the end of the game, it looked like Vidablik might at least get a goal, but then Davy Roof decided to save the penalty from, I think it was Gustafsson. Again, apologies if that's not how to pronounce that one, but yeah, 5-0 win for Gent, nicely sitting at the top of the table in Group B. Obviously, Maccabi Tel Aviv and Zorya Luhansk did not go ahead, given the current situation in Israel. So wait to see, I guess, on that one, what happens. Obviously, Zorya, being Ukrainian, are no strangers to kind of
political upheaval and war and conflict and stuff like that. So quite an interesting two sides to pit together. I'm sure people look back in history as that quite an interesting moment. But anyway, good win for Ghent there. They then followed that up with a win over Standard Liège. They were awarded a penalty pretty quickly into the game. Gineppo judged to a foul, committed a foul in the box, looked pretty soft to me. Kuiper stepped up, his penalty was rubbish. Bodart saved it. In the 32nd minute, oh no, sorry, before that, 24th minute, Standard then get their first penalty of the game. Again, looked a little bit soft. Candice was adjudged to have fouled Kanga in the box, but on some of the replays, it did look like he got the ball. But it didn't matter anyway, because Roof saved another penalty, so that was two in the space of a week for Roof. Ghent then did finally take the lead in the 32nd minute, ball into the box. Header on Tisa Dali celebrates, but it's been put down as a Marlon Fossey goal. Own goal, apologies from him. And that kind of started an absolute blitz, a 7-minute blitz from Ghent. Kuipers then tapped, headed in from an Archie Brown cross. Really nice play from Archie Brown. Tisa Dali then did get on the score sheet when his shot just went through Bodart into the back of the net. So yeah, 3-0 at half time. Hoofkins rang the changes, chucked on some of the younger guys. One of these was Isaac Price for Harry Kawabi. Price then turned provider for Wilfred Kanga to at least get a goal to kind of put the penalty miss out of his mind. Unfortunately, he had another chance in the 84th minute to just kind of show that he can score a penalty, but Roof decided he's going to save another one. So that's three penalties saved by Davy Roof in the space of a week. To think that he probably wouldn't have even been playing this game if Nardi hadn't got injured last week against Cercle Bruges. Like, he would have played in midweek because that's just how they rotate, but he played in this one and he probably helped win them the game. Although I think that kind of 7-minute spell was just, it was an absolute blitz from Ghent, and it's something that they've got the players and the quality to do in terms of the goal scorers. We just haven't seen them be able to find the back of the net recently. So they'll be quite happy to see that. They go into third, just a point behind Anderlecht, 4 points behind Union.
Yep, they bounced back after that first defeat last week against Cercle Bruges. A commanding performance in the end, I guess, and giving Standard a bit of a taste of their own medicine. Like last week, Standard scored three goals in the space of 9 minutes, I believe it was. Now Ghent did something similar. You said 7 minutes. I didn't know. Look up the complete things, but in a very short amount of time anyway. And by doing so, put the game to bed quite early on. They're still in the first half, of course. Yeah, that first penalty, that's probably one of the first quickest penalties you will actually see, though. So that was the first one for Standard. After 2 minutes, I believe it was Gineppo giving that one away in a silly way, but Kuipers missing it, and at that time continuing his form of in the league without scoring goals. He did make up for that, so he did score his first goal since, what was it, 13th of August, I believe. So that he's back on track there, of course. So good for him and for Ghent that he's finding the net again. Tisa Dali also pitched in a few times. Also, a bit weird to say then, from Standard's point of view, Bodar was saving them a lot in the beginning, and it was probably their man of the match, regardless of what happened afterwards. On the other hand, I also feel like he could have done better, at least on that third goal, and maybe even on a few of the other goals, another one of the other goals as well. I don't remember which one, and of course, given that was the third goal that really puts the game to bed. Yeah, it's difficult to still call him their main man, but he did have a good game all in all, but not without a mistake, I think you can say, to get to the goal that made them concede a goal. Yeah, last week, yeah, indeed, scoring three in a few minutes, now conceding. Also, Alzate's 100% record is definitely ruined now. And Kanga, yeah, I don't think he will be taking many more penalties. Also, a weird thing, of course, when you then see how he seems to have finished that his actual goal in a quite very composed way. Maybe that was less composed by than it actually looked like, to be honest, because I find his shooting still a bit, not very consistent, not very controlled, but this one did really go in. And of course the action before that was a really good one, the fake, I mean. And definitely all about Roof in this game. Need to come back to him, of course. Saving two penalties in one game, it doesn't happen so often. Saving with three in one week, even less so. And I actually do not have his stats at the moment, but with Gent, I believe on his first save, it was the eighth one in 22 or 23 that he had conceded. So then that would make it nine in 23 or 24 that he saved. And that's only at Gent. Also before that, at Anderlecht and at Waasland Bever, among others. He did save some penalties. I just saw a nice compilation. I haven't watched it yet, but a nice compilation of all his penalty saves so far. And definitely the man of the hour here. And it was definitely that second one was needed because, well, with all my talk about putting the game to bed, if Kanga would have, or someone else, if Standaard had scored that goal, somehow it would be 3-2 and anything would have been possible again, because in the second half, Standaard actually were probably the better side. But okay, it's difficult to say when you're 3-0 down. It's a bit of a natural flow of a game, of course, as well, that then the team leading is going to be a bit more relaxed and maybe a bit too much relaxed. Maybe the Gent would have been able to get themselves back together. But it's not even a question that we don't need to ask.
No, yeah, definitely. The Davy Roof stats, they are a little bit ridiculous. So I think Opta put some out, and it was 10 of the 27 he's faced in the Pro League he's saved. So it's around about, they said around about, he's gotten a save rate of like 37%. Forgive me if that isn't true, but I'm just reading what I've been shown. And they said that it's the highest penalty save percentage on record among all goalkeepers who have faced 15 penalties since 2014-15. I mean, that does sound like one of those, I don't know if people listening watch the NBA, where they say that's the first player to score like 23 points with one block or with his left hand on a Saturday in August or some stupid nonsense like that. But I mean, they have to kind of judge it a little bit. And I mean, 15 penalties is a reasonably large sample size, at least since 2014-15. So fair play to him. And those who have been with us for a while remember in the 2022 Croiky Cup, not the World Cup. In the Croiky Cup, he made some important saves in the penalty shootout to beat Vincent Kompany's Anderlecht. Fair play to Davy Roof. He's turning into a little bit of a penalty specialist, even if some of the penalties were pretty rubbish. But a penalty always looks better or worse depending on which way the goalkeeper goes, to be honest. Let's go to the final game, Kortrijk against Genk. Genk did not win in the Europa League. They faced Ferencváros from Hungary. That one finished 0-0. Tolu got sent off in the 93rd minute. However, he was up front against Kortrijk and he gave Genk the lead. Lovely ball in from Hrzowski and Tolu. Yeah, a really nice header, actually, kind of leaning back and like powering it the other way past Vandenberg into the back of the net. Paintsil was just running in straight lines all game. Lots of times on the counter-attack, and it felt just a matter of when Genk would get the second. Bit of a scrambly one, but Paintsil eventually taps it in the 72nd minute. The third is also a little bit of a scrambly one a couple of minutes later. Was originally given as offside, but then was overturned because it wasn't offside. Vandenberg makes a save, but then Munoz is there to dive and head it in. And I don't know, you may have watched a little bit more of this one than I did, but it just felt like on those two, the Paints one and the Munoz one, the Kortrijk defending was really kind of lackluster, not kind of putting them. There was a couple of players putting their bodies on the line, but it didn't feel very, very like committed defending, which was a little bit concerning because
I mean, in the last couple of weeks, they've looked a little bit better. Obviously, they beat Cercle Bruges and lost to Vestalo, but then they beat Club Bruges last weekend. So, I mean, that Club Bruges one is probably a bonus one, and they were always expected to lose to Genk. But I felt the manner of some of their defending was a little bit lackluster. And probably their best chance was an Avenatti kind of trying to sprint on the counter-attack, and it never looked like he was ever going to get anywhere. Forced a decent save out of Van der Voort. And Malinov had a decent strike that went just over. But Genk get the win, get a clean sheet, and they go level on points with Cercle Bruges and sit fifth.
Yeah, well, there was also to name then probably all of Kortrijk's chances of all game. A nice save from Van der Voort on probably the most dangerous one, a strike from Kadri that was like a minute before the one from Malinov that went over, I believe. But yeah, that's already saying a lot. That were all the chances, and even that one was a shot from reasonable distance still. So yeah, it was a really good save. It was a really good shot, but and one you would expect to be saved nonetheless. Well, and I agree that defending on some of those goals from Kortrijk was not really great, but they held on quite long. There's also their first home loss, interesting statistic, since the 20th of August against Eupen of all teams. And we all know that they hadn't won for a long while now. So that's there was four games unbeaten at home before this one. And also what worked last week, sitting deep and try to counter. Yeah, that just did not work this time. Maybe in part because of the midfield changes that Franken made, having some effect. He put on all three of Galarza, Heine and Rozovski on the pitch, and they really were dominating from the first minute on. Initially, yeah, not creating enough, although, well, creating a lot, maybe relatively a lot, but just the final pass just not going right, but Kortrijk was defending relatively well nonetheless in that first half. Definitely I enjoyed watching that midfield. It's difficult to say if that was down to Kortrijk's way of playing as well, that it made them look so strong, or if it's something that consistently could be an alternative for Franke as well. That's because this meant Canoes was left on the bench this time for a little bit of a rotation. There was quite some rotation going on after the midweek game as well against Ferencváros. Nonetheless, I kind of want to see that more often, not necessarily Bilal Alkanous on the bench, but maybe putting him on the left side, because I feel like there is a bit of a gap still. That in quantity there is enough players there, but the quality is not completely there at the moment. You can see Fadera struggling with his confidence and form on the pitch. There's definitely room for improvement there. Of course, there's other options as well, but I do feel like maybe Elkanus could fill in more or less the role that Trezor had last season, also with a bit of freedom, of course, on that position, and that might be the best for the team. It's at least an interesting thought experiment, and it's the most comfortable win in Kortrijk that Genk have had since I followed them, I think. It's always a very difficult place to go, regardless of the position they're in, given circumstances, the pitch not being so great, and so on and so forth. But Franken adapting to that definitely did help to really dominate this game, and it was waiting for that first goal. Wasn't really a nice goal. Second goal, yeah, defending definitely not great. Great through ball from Heine, though, to mention that one as well. But nonetheless, good performance. Clean sheet, actually three clean sheets in a row. Also considering that game against the Ferencváros, otherwise two in the league as well. That's always encouraging. Also, 7 goals by 7 different players in the last 2 games. I found that remarkable too. So they also found their scoring forms, but they're not relying on one player for that. Also, I believe the top scorers are divided as well, like a bit of few players, or three or four players maybe even, that have three goals now, which is not enough. To be honest, that's another piece that's missing a bit still. So still a bit of a worry for me is the left wing and then in the striker in the general picture. Or a goal scorer, it doesn't necessarily need to be a striker, but as long as, like, yeah, 7 goals by 7 different players, it can mean both things as well. So it's good that the goals can come from anywhere, but it's always nice also to have that one prolific striker up front that can help relieve the stress in difficult moments as well. Also noteworthy, the first time they won two consecutive games in the league this season, which is no real surprise given last week was their first home win, and generally the schedule is more or less built on, like, you play home and you play away after week after. But nonetheless, finally that they got that. And a very important win as well. Of course, all of the top five have won, so it was vital to hang on in this week and to be a bit more comfortable in the top six. And also with that game in Antwerp that I mentioned before, coming soon to relieve a little bit of stress on that one. Their away form has been great. Let's see if they can carry it on.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of momentum going into that Antwerp game. And like you said, they can kind of extend the gap to Antwerp with that win. And then, yeah, top five are winning, bottom five are losing. Means Vesselo are now, I think, 6 points adrift from definite safety, which is obviously 12. Kortrijk, 5 points adrift. The gap will grow. It will definitely grow if you don't start picking up points. And yeah, Kortrijk minus 16 goal difference is pretty poor, to say the least. They kind of need to turn things around quite quickly. But again, like we just have been saying, this is one of those games you didn't really expect them to win. They've got Dender in the cup, and then they've got Molenbeek. So that could be a really big one, because that is the team in 12th place. So that's the team they can kind of start to bridge the gap to. Sides that want to replace those guys in the Pro League are all playing in the Challenger. Usually we'd hand over to Scott for this bit, but I'm going to run through the results and a little bit of talking points that came out of this weekend. Oostend drew 0-0 to Patrick Eijsden, so they're still languishing down the bottom. Lommel and Zolta Varagem drew 1-1 in the table topper. Zeno Gano gave Zolta Varagem the lead after 50 minutes, but then Arta Salad got Lommel back in the game to finish that one off 1-1. Lommel had a lot more of the ball in that one, but couldn't quite find the winner. Salang, they beat Club Next 2-1. Jong Genk lost 3-1 to 10-man Lies. Beveren got another win. They beat Frankspoorans 3-0. Bishkot lost 1-0 to Dender at home, which, yeah, frustrating for them because they could have really taken advantage of the Lommel-Zolta Varagem draw. If they had won, they then got the SL16 game still to come, which they decided to be happy with being rearranged and playing. That news came out today. Speaking of SL16, they got only their second win of the season. They beat Denzer 2-1. Romain Mundel, former Tottenham Youth Academy product, he scored in the 10th and the 87th minute either side of a Suleiman Anne penalty. Big win for SL16 to keep them in touch. RC Liège, they lost to Anderlecht Futures. Lommel stayed top, just a point ahead. Zolta Varagem stayed top, a point ahead of Lommel. Bishkot are in third with 17 points. But yeah, they could have kind of been level on points, Zolta Varagem, if they had managed to beat Dender. Dender moved up to sixth place themselves. Down the bottom, yeah, Poort, Oostend still second bottom. Still no wins in the last five games for them. SL16 obviously turned things around. Frankspoorans are now kind of slipping down as well. Lies at least get two wins on the bounce. Beveren, that's two wins on the bounce as well. And despite everything that's kind of been going on at Beveren, they want to be kind of pushing up to the top. They're not actually that far off. They're only 4 points behind Club Next, who are in fourth place with 16. So lots of chances for them. Lots of these teams are going to be playing in the cup this week, so there'll be some chance for some cup sets, which we all love. We'll talk about any of those that are worth mentioning next week when Scott returns, but I will not be there. So it'll be another two-man show for Scott and Joris. Joris, are any of the upcoming cup games that you're looking forward to that you think we might see an upset in? Not going to run through all of them for everyone, but are there any that people should keep an eye on, which do start very, very soon? They may be out, maybe already finished by the time you listen to this one.
Yeah, that's definitely very much possible. Well, I think the Lierse-Antwerp one could be one a little bit feisty. So regardless of forms of both teams and so on, whether there is a result in there, I think on the fan side of things, the teams are quite close, situated quite closely to each other. There might be something in that one. What else is there? Well, I think that's the main one I would point out anyway. And yeah, other potential cup sets, you probably can look at the teams lower in the rankings that probably have a little bit less importance to the cup as well in 1A. Beerschot Club Brugge could be an interesting...
Yeah, should be a good atmosphere, especially for the Lierse game. Dender Kortrijk, obviously, that's one that, yeah, as I just said, Dender have been doing quite well recently. Bever and Vesterlo, obviously, because Vesterlo are doing quite badly. It could be an interesting one. Nokke Mechelen, I mean, the way Mechelen are playing, that one could definitely be an upset. But it could be a good chance for Mechelen to kind of turn things around and get things back on track. So, yeah, we'll see hopefully some cup upsets. We like to see some of these smaller teams get further through into the later rounds. And I think that probably does it for this week's episode. Joris, it's been a pleasure chatting through all the Belgian stuff with you.
Yes, pleasure as always, indeed. Next week with Scott. We'll see you soon. So quickly, Vin, we won't miss you for too long. I'm happy about that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, 2 weeks away for me. But I'll still try and keep an eye on all the Belgian stuff going on. And then we'll be back once again. But yeah, Scott should hopefully be back next week to steer the ship alongside Joris once again. If you've enjoyed listening to the episode, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. Definitely drop us any questions you've got for next week's episode as well, coming off the back of any of the cup games, any of the weekend's matches. But yeah, as always, thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.